Hello. This the West Binge, that's what we decided to call it, right?
Yeah,
Am I
that's the name.
introducing it
That's
or did I just happen to
yeah,
speak
no, go.
first?
Yeah,
You just happen to speak first.
you're the most experienced, I think.
I don't know about
Is Matt more
that.
experienced?
I have some TV experience. I was on a
Did you
TV show for
really?
2 years.
You were
Yeah,
too.
we don't have to get too much into that,
No,
but
tell me about that. Was it the West Wing?
I will. No, it wasn't the West Wing. It was a health and awareness kids show for 2 years, but I was a co-host, so that was kind of
Yeah,
fun.
that is so cool.
Did that when I was in high school. But
Yeah.
yeah, episode two.
Oh,
Post. Where are you I'm
gonna.
Chris. One of
Oh,
those
yeah.
people is Matt, and the other is Drew.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Drew. No, I'm not a Drew. I'm Matt.
I'm Drew.
And Chris already said his name at the start, so maybe. Because we did it at the end, but you Just edited in it back in case, at the beginning,
yeah,
right?
you did.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Now we're just doing nostalgic bits of the last episode. This is a joke that's only relevant to us.
it's very unnatural
It just in case you start with this one, there's a previous one.
to That's the thing they do in podcasts. In pocket at the end, they'll say you can find us at clearly you've already been found. Why do they do this? It's like and also that they do it in the middle of episode 5 of season 7. Surely people know they don't jump in at that
Yeah.
point.
Well, some people might like be listening with their friends or something and like, oh, I'll finish that later. I don't know. It's possible,
Have
but
you ever?
I feel like if they're interested enough, they'll listen to it, you know? It's like you don't need
But have
to.
you ever jumped in the middle of a podcast rather than at the start of,
If I was scrubbing through it and I was looking for something specific,
No, I
but
mean
no, that's like one I've already listened, a brand new one.
episode 30 rather than, episode 1 if you're listening.
Sometimes. That's how I like if my friends introduce one to me and then I want to go back and listen to it and start from the beginning, that Current happens
events.
sometimes.
There's a
Current
few
event, yeah.
That's
Things
true, yeah.
like
Linux newsy shows. Sometimes I'll even take a break. I won't listen to it for a month and then I'll come back after a month.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are just like, okay, I know your opinions for the month. They're only going to be, they're only going to come back in
Some
various
episodes are only
situations.
relevant for a short amount of time, which is why you can jump in at any time, rather
Yeah,
than
no, do you
like
know
a
what? No,
podcast that have a narrative in them.
I
You
say
have to
that.
listen to them.
I have actually done. I listened to a podcast the other day where they watched what was it? There's a documentary about Hillary Clinton. Basically a hagiography of Hillary Clinton, and it was Chapo, I can't remember what they're called, but they very very left wing just ripping the piss out of
Oh, Chapo Trap Chap House.
true,
Chapo
yeah
Trap House.
Chapo Trap House. Yeah, very good, very funny,
That's a
very
tongue
entertaining.
twister of a
I
kind.
just I'm always
Yeah.
up for ripping the piss out of the Clintons,
Good thing there's a lot of different ways to listen to a
including of
podcast.
course maybe the
Yeah.
ones in the West Wing.
The
What, sorry?
This because I get big include maybe do you
Let's
I was drawing into the West Wing.
do
Maybe that like
it. Let's
because
talk about the West Wing.
I get
You
Clinton
talked about this
vibes out
last,
of a
the
lot of the West
Clinton-esque
Wing. vibes of people in the West Wing. We talked about this last time a little
It's
bit,
more
yeah.
like Clinton era politics. Like I Yeah.
think this is
Yeah.
I don't okay, I'm sorry about this. This is not gonna go down well, but I'm gonna say it anyway. I imagine this is like the timelines don't line up, but like I reckon like Hillary Clinton would have loved the show as like a kid. Like this would be the thing that makes her
It's the thing that makes
like
her who
go.
she is politically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see
Like
that.
it,
Yeah.
and also like the brass in the soundtrack, like it kind of hits, but I don't know for the right reasons. Like I like brass as a like a brass section. I like the old man brass bands that you get, like the village brass bands that you get. They're kind of nice. They're like, yeah, but like that's what I associate them with, like sleepy village fairs.
Yeah.
So when they play it on the West Wing, I'm thinking it's a bit wanky. It's a bit wanky. Now I like a bit,
Well, something
like.
I noticed this episode actually is the opening theme. I think it's just in the first season is very slow and very gentle, and in subsequent seasons it becomes like much more strident and much more like
Okay.
boom, boom, yeah, faster and more strident.
It's again, it's so hard to watch this and not think it's ironic. Like it to me, this is almost it almost feels like a piss take because it is so like it's so like just before 9/11, just before everything that came with it, and even just before, well, and even a little bit just before Obama, really, as well. Because I feel like, that kind of changed a lot of the discourse in a lot of ways as well. Like it I mean, at the very least, it gave politics at that level some very searching questions that it needed to ask itself about race and identity.
Yeah. Mm.
So a lot of it, because it does feel very, this episode, I don't know if it's this episode in particular, and I think it might be, it feels very like white manny, you know, very,
yep.
It's that very Friends level of masculinity almost, mm-hmm. as well.
Yep.
Like not wrestling with the issues under the surface enough.
There's a lot that's taken for granted. It's that optimistic 90s period again. Yeah. You know, at the time, obviously, it read as optimistic and hopeful and, you know, if only politics could be like this. And I agree with you. I think now it reads, not quite, but like if you just tweaked it slightly, it reads as satire. It reads as a condemnation of everything that was wrong with politics.
Yeah. But it's fascinating, I'm finding it difficult to follow the plot because there are little bits that I pull out and I just massively extrapolate. John Spencer's character. Now, is this the first time we've seen him?
No, Leo, he wasn't in the last one a great deal, but he was in. Yeah. You mean Leo, right? Okay.
Yeah, Leo. What does he do again?
He's the chief of staff, so he's the closest one to the president.
Right, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
His office is literally connected to the Oval Office.
Yeah. Well, that being said, of course, with Martin Sheen, Bartlett, that's a weird name. Because I get like it like it's like Manlet, you know, Bartlett. It's like small.
Like
it's against his name.
That's a name with in America, like historical. This is another reason why I find it interesting. Again, Hispanic actor playing not just a white dude, but a New England white dude who is the descendant of, another Josiah Bartlett, a signatory of the Declaration of Independence. There was a Bartlett, and this Bartlett is a descendant of that Bartlett.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's okay. That's an interesting bit of trivia there. He's the Martin Sheen role there is very typecast, but and the thing is as well, I don't think this is the best version of that character that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best version of that character that he's done, and I'm happy to take pushback on this one, is the elusive man in Mass Effect 2 and 3. I think that was a lot more. That was, do you know what I mean?
That's a better President Bartlett than President Bartlett.
Well, you would quiver at the President Elusive Man.
It was Josiah Bartlett that signed the.
But it's the same. It's the same. It's the same character. Although, of course, like
the Declaration,
Bartlett is the softer. He's the good elusive man.
Yeah.
He's the bad in the Mass Effect. He's the bad elusive man.
He's the bad. He's the bad. He's the antagonist.
Is he the villain? He's like a villain.
He's a villain. Yeah.
Kind of right.
There are ups and downs of it, but at the end of the day,
it's been a long time since I've played Mass Effect. I've only got a very vague. I just remember thinking, "Oh my god, it's President Bartlett."
He probably delayed my quitting smoking. If I'm completely honest, because it makes it look so nice.
Smoking is cool.
Elusive Man.
It was. It's all about the image.
If any tobacco manufacturers want to sponsor this podcast, we're absolutely up for that.
That's a bit like can't we try something that we all enjoy? Maybe like
well, take up smoking.
Oil.
weapons manufacturers.
Yeah, Lockheed Martin.
So thematically appropriate.
Lockheed Martin was like less suspicious, right?
What's that awful company that does like mercenaries and stuff? Like
Blackwater.
Yeah, I do.
They've renamed a couple of times. They've rebranded. First of all, Blackwater. What a name!
Such a sinister name. Like it's the perfect name for we will go and kill people for you. Extrajudicially. Can somebody say that word for me? I literally can't say it.
Extrajudicially.
Thank you.
Extrajudicially.
In fact, I believe in Deus Ex, the new ones, the the shady paramilitary group is called Bell Tower, which again also sinister, but it's not as sinister as Blackwater.
No, Blackwater's worse. No. Yeah, worse than the fictional one, which is amazing.
Yeah, and also there's one. I think in Deus Ex there's another one called Blue Water.
Is there really?
Which I don't know. I don't know if that's a parody or a Mickey take or something, or whether or not it's just like let's come up with a name. Sinister paramilitary.
You could change your name and have the same brand, still be terrible.
I think they changed the name to something like XIZ. Or something to that effect. Yeah.
That's a weird. That's
so they were going for the bottom of the phone book tactic at that time.
I mean, that sounds. I don't mean this in like any kind of racism, but like that sounds Chinese. If I see
Chinese, maybe it was G. Then... Yeah, psyops, confusion. Hide in plain sight. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it helped them score a contract if they were called Z instead of.
Maybe they're trying to get work in China.
Yeah,
in Chinese.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's the thing about paramilitary groups, isn't it? You know, they ain't got no allegiance.
Yeah. No, terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Yeah, so if they want to sponsor us, get in touch. Monsanto, Exxon.
Merged with Triple Canopy. Ooh, triple canopy. That sounds nice. That sounds like some garden furniture.
It's one of those that sounds so nothing that it sounds sinister. Like Umbrella Corporation, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't. Yeah, is Umbrella Corporation? Cause that sounds sinister to me. But is that just because
it's Resident Evil, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's Resident Evil. Yeah.
But I think it sounds. It's one of those ones that because like all the evilest companies are just called something completely innocuous, like you know.
Yeah, I love the services they provide: security management, risk management, crisis management, full service risk management consulting. Revenue unknown, net income unknown.
They manage everything. They don't.
And its parent company is Constellis.
Yeah, so generic, so nothing.
Wow. Yeah. Formerly known as Blackwater. Oh, okay, it's just a fucking circle. It's a Isle of Man circle of companies.
Yeah.
That only makes sense.
Yeah, you know, so we're getting. Let's get back.
Oh, right, yeah.
So this episode, you see a bit more of Mandy. What do you think of Mandy, the political consultant lady who is convinced to work for Bartlett again?
Not afraid to speak her mind.
Was she the one that drove the car? Oh, she's the one with Moxie, right? Like that feels like that's another 90s.
I think Sorkin's characters. Quite often, I think this applies to Lawrence Tulliver, you know, the doctor who comes in and he's so positive and he's talking about his family. He might as well be like, you know, I've only got one day till retirement kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
they telegraph the fact you know immediately that he's gone. Anyway, I think Sorkin characters often read like they're from the 1940s and Mandy falls into that category and Lawrence Tulliver totally falls into that category.
It's Spinelli, live from Recess type that kind
of. Yeah,
yeah. It's I don't know. I've yet to make up my mind. I've yet to make up my mind on most of these characters.
Did you like this better? Because you didn't like the pilot very much at all, did you? Nor the characters. Did you more positive about this or
the probably?
Yeah.
I think a little bit with Pilot was that it was a little bit more disorientating because you're still learning the characters, you're still all that kind of
stuff. Get a little more insight this time.
Yeah, I feel like once I get more familiar with the characters, I think I'll have a lot more stuff.
I think this one's got more compared to the pilot. This one's got more. It's more of a narrative, and you've got some stakes. You know what's at stake, and you know who's moving for what. They're not this episode and the next episode kind of make a pair, really. And as I said last time, they're not my favorite episodes. I don't enjoy them hugely. They're too much about. Well, I mean, yeah, it gets telegraphed at the end, right? There's that bit where President Bartlett's like, I'm not a man who's comfortable with violence. I'm a peaceful man. I'm scared of the military. Blah blah blah. And then at the end, he's like, I'm going to wipe them off the face of the earth with God's own purity. Like it's too quick a turnaround. Like, weren't very committed to these peaceful
ideas.
Yeah,
it didn't really take... His, like, first principle got abandoned immediately there, you
yeah.
know.
It's, a, it's that a bit like... Yeah, a little bit like the end of the first episode, actually, where he plays all nicey-nicey with the religious people, and then he turns around and goes... Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
That was more like he was saving the moment. This yeah, situation is yeah. more like he's matching what the other people did, not doing the opposite of what
yeah,
they did.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Like, he's got a dark... This is his dark side coming out.
I think this is another characteristic of Sorkin in particular, and again, liberals in general, in America in particular. Like, they fucking love the military. Sorkin... it's clear throughout his writing, like he respects, admires, supports the, you know, the American military. They're a force, you know, they make missteps now and then, but they're a force for good, which I find very hard to stomach.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this kind of stuff is sort of stuff with that naivety. Mm-hmm. I felt like that was just like Bartlett's like thing where he just does a quick U-turn on. I'm going to pretend to be really nice. Actually, I'm a bastard.
No, he's erratic. This comes out, and there's a nice tension later on between Toby and the president. Toby feels that the president sometimes doesn't follow his better angels. You know, he's sidetracked by his demons. He's very capricious. Like, he chops and changes between things, but he's supposed to be more... I find his quick turnaround in this episode very strange. I think the turnaround in the first episode is he's kind of... That's all. He never loses control. He's being passive aggressive towards those, you know, right wing Christians. And then, like, yeah, like Matt said, he brings out he lulls them into a false sense of security, and then brings out the "fuck you, get out of my White House." Whereas this is like, "I am a man of peace. Oh, you killed somebody I vaguely know. Bomb the fuck out of them. You know, carpet bomb them." Which,
yeah, this seems like he's less in control. In this reaction,
maybe he felt like he was doing that with you, the audience.
Yeah. Well, maybe it feels more personal to him because it's somebody that serves him and is close to him. And
No, I get why he lost it, but it's a very quick moral 180, right? Yeah. And it is also, you know, the first person to die in this show is a black dude. Well done.
Mm. Yeah, I saw something online that said like showing the picture of his family.
Yeah.
Prevent that.
That was a bit like
look at the photo. There's a photo around.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, actually. One, I think Toby is someone who I think I'm coming around to a little bit.
I love Toby. I do love Toby.
He strikes me as possible. I might completely be misreading this, but like he strikes me as a little bit of the voice of reason.
Expand on that, because
I don't know. I get pragmatic vibes off of him. Like, I don't want to say anything too concrete because I don't have any confidence in eyeing up these characters right now.
I mean, we might. Yeah, I don't want to be spoilery. But I my read on Toby, and tell me to shut up if I cross the, you know, spoilery border. But he's I think I said last week, he's the most morally centered of the characters. He will almost all of the time do what's right. And to a large extent, regardless of the cost, I think.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
In terms of Josh is the very pragmatic one, I would say. Josh and Leo.
Josh. Oh, right. Yeah. Do you think? Okay. Interesting.
He was gloating a little bit. And he wanted all of the bagels.
Yeah.
Wasn't something about bringing him all the bagels in the land?
Yeah. There are some moments like that. There's another moment that you're going to enjoy in the first season where. Josh and what's Rob Lowe's character's called?
Oh, Sam. Seaman.
Sam. Josh and Sam. They're doing this thing, which is very of its time, where they're going, "Who the men?" And it's very embarrassing.
Oh God, now. No! Yeah. Oh, you might as well just go, "What's up?"
Yeah. It's so. Yeah.
I'm not sure about Sam Seaborn. In fact, to be fair. If you're not meant to like him as a character, I think they're doing a good job. But...
Yeah, because he totally like interrupts that whole situation for himself. Like he totally causes a whole thing.
He's like, I mean,
and then she changes her mind.
Yeah. He essentially he goes to her. He acts in a threatening way in her workplace, essentially, and then threatens her again. She tells him, "I'm scared and." I think I noted it down actually. What the word she used? You humiliated and scared me.
Yeah.
And he says, yeah. "I'm sorry. That's the way it's going to be." And then she's like, "Oh, okay, cool."
She's like, "Whoa!"
Yeah, yeah. He is very toxic in that scene.
Yeah.
He's yeah. And
controlling
like,
and everything.
And as she even said, like, you could have just like walked away, and I basically wouldn't have existed after you. You know what I mean? Like, I think it shows a fundamental like disconnect from women that he's got, because it's like it's this idea that someone who works as a call girl cannot have any kind of like personal attraction. Like he seems to have failed to internalize that actually, like
she hasn't chosen it actually.
Yeah, once he found out she was a call girl, that's all he could see. And I feel that
I don't know if that's fair. I don't know if that's fair with him. I think, yeah, I mean, people keep saying to him, oh, you're trying to redeem her, you're trying to redeem her. And he is, which is dodgy. But,
change her, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he does, I think he genuinely likes her as a person. Like, he does like her, and yeah, her being a sex worker is a problem for him, but he still wants to be her friend. I don't know whether that speaks well of him or not, because he does act in a very awful way.
I also think a part of it is a little bit of like, you're going to know more than I do, of course, but it feels like there's a little bit of narcissism making it about me.
Yeah.
And I think that I think that a lot of his morality could feel like it could be based around doing good from his perspective, like less empathy, even though doing what's right within his little window without looking at it from anyone else.
I think that's right.
Probably, like, went up to that table with all good intentions, but he had no idea he was actually.
But I don't think we're supposed to read it that way. I think we're supposed to be on his side. We're supposed to go, yes, she's a sex worker, and, you know, she seems to be okay at the moment, but that is a self-destructive path. She's clearly, you know, nobody could want this. And we're supposed to be judging her, I think. I think we're supposed to be on his side. We're supposed to want to see her redeemed.
I couldn't be on his side any less.
No, of course. No.
are you sure? See, this is where the big disconnect between me and the show comes from. Is like, I would see, if this was made today, I would think they were setting up Rob Lowe as a very obvious, like, dickhead, you know?
See, I read him that way, and I continue to read him that way. Stacey likes him, right? I think she said part of that is because he's very handsome, which is fair enough. But
I mean, to be fair, it almost feels like that's part of his character, that like he acts like a complete jackass, and crosses many lines, but like
I don't think it's out of malice though. The biggest vibe I get from Sam is naivety.
See, I get like self-centeredness.
I think those two things can be related, right?
Yeah, but like not necessarily malice, but also like if you're going to be that self-centered, isn't like
essentially it's functionally malicious? Yeah,
it's not any better.
No,
you know?
Yeah. I think that's a fair read. I think that's a fair read on.
But then again, like if I'm in my head, I imagine him as a villain. So you know, and like I think actually as a villain, or not a villain, but like you know what I mean, as a I don't know, problematic character, whatever. Like I'm kind of enjoying.
I wish he was written as that. I think that the West Wing, again, I think this is very, very, very in common with Star Trek, particularly under Roddenberry. It is unrelentingly positive and unrelentingly hopeful and unrelentingly optimistic, and there are no. Like the characters, the main set of characters, they have little flaws, but none of them are ever written bad. And I wish they were from time to time. I wish some of them went down the wrong path. Oh, and I wish Sam.
It never goes down the wrong path really far. Like deep malice.
I wish Sorkin had been conscious of how he was writing Sam, and we were supposed to be not siding with him here. Mm. That would have been way more interesting.
Yeah.
But again, a different time. I'm going time, to pre 9/11. You know, it's a different time. And
I mean, in this case, like pre Me Too, I guess. I mean, in some cases, though, like I was working this out I don't know if this is true or whether or not the opposite is true, is like, so what, like, a member of a senior member of White House staff is like, it gets blown open, publicly known, that he visits a call girl. How does that move the needle? Like, would anyone care nowadays? Or would we have cared more now, or would we have cared more then?
I think we would have cared more then. I think it would have been a story, but I think I said last week, can you name...
I mean, if he's a Republican, it would have been like, as long as she's of age,
yeah.
It's like...
Oh, yeah, different rules, yeah, same here, right? Labour and Tories, and yeah, different rules for the Republicans and Democrats. But I think it would have been a story, and it's the kind of thing that, yeah, the press office and whatever would have worried about, but I don't think it would have mattered. And only, like, absolute political wonks would have read about it. Nobody else would have cared. It wouldn't have made the tabloids.
Who would be an equivalent today, do you think? That would, like...
Like, the level?
Oh, my God. Yeah, well...
I think it's somebody we've not even heard of. I think that's the point. This is not an elected person. This is a, you know, essentially, effectively a civil servant in, you know, UK terms. So some Home Office civil servant, you know, whoever is the top Home Office civil servant, like it might make page 10 in the Times, but it's not going to be in the,
yeah,
you know,
if that, like, I mean look at, you know, the COVID lockdown breaches as well as like how, like, Boris Johnson's personal life, you know, and all that, like, I mean, this is so insignificant, yeah, next to things like that, yeah, or anything.
Well, more an even more pronounced example of that, and more central to the episode in a way. So the idea that President Bartlet making a joke about the Ryder golf team to the point where they were insulted, and then they cancelled a visit to the White House. Who in the living, and they're treating that like, oh, this is really bad, this is really bad PR for us. Who the fuck is going to care about that? Who's going to read a story about the Ryder Cup team refuses to visit the White House and give a shit?
Especially pre-Twitter and anything like
any time. Who fucking?
That's
cares?
Not going to be news for a long time at all.
And that leads into the conversation about President Bartlet campaigning in Texas makes a joke about big hats.
The hat. And they never, like, really go into that.
Don't say what the joke is. Which why? Is the same, yeah.
Yeah.
and CJ says that's why they lost Texas, and then Bartlet comes out with the post hoc ergo propter hoc, meaning after it, therefore because of it, and says that, you know, usually it's not true, and in this case it's not true. And he says to her, "When do you think I lost Texas?" And she says, "When you learned Latin," which I think it's a great line. But it's symptomatic of, and this is, you know, I need a code word for, like, when I'm going to mention Trump, but this is the kind of, like, general media disregard for the rest of the country that, again, paved the way for Trump. You know, there's the coasts. That's where the smart, intelligent, cool...
You could, like, say 45th.
Important people live.
You could say that.
Yeah. 45th, that's good. Yeah. So you got the coasts where the important people live, and the rest of the American where the fucking hick redneck idiots live. And
yeah,
that's a common theme in any media from virtually any time, right?
That's kind of, yeah, like, I thought that was a good line, but it was also, and this episode had it as well. I don't know if I'm getting used to it or they toned it down. The everyone's, like,
yeah,
this,
yeah,
ridiculous quickie. Sort of snap back and forth, yeah, of ridiculous, yeah, quick wit.
That's part of the elitism that's embodied by it. Like, these are all Ivy League smart, right? They're all educated, Ivy League educated,
yeah,
liberal, coastal elites. And they're
like the football, like the football discussion, the football, like, discussion.
Yeah. Oh, I love Donna.
The betting and the.
This is a good, yeah, Donna episode. Donna. Donna, I love Donna so much.
And the cookies, the cookies at the desk.
Yeah.
Which one's Donna again?
Donna is Josh's assistant.
The
blonde lady.
Okay.
In the first episode, she's the one trying to bring him coffee, and he's like, "When did you ever bring me coffee?"
No, I like her.
It's a cool character, and she plays it so well.
Mm. Oh, I said this in chat, and I genuinely do enjoy this about things from this era. People wore sensibly sized clothes.
Yeah, it's the super like, tight suits on there, yeah.
I mean, Rishi Sunak's like kind of the worst for it these days. Like, it's like, what are you gonna move? How are you gonna move? Like, yeah, there is no, yeah. It doesn't visibly look comfortable.
It makes nice lines. I think it does make nice lines, but it makes nice lines in a way where, yeah, it literally looks too small for you. It looks uncomfortable.
It looks uncomfortably small. It looks like a little bit like an action figure almost, you know, like,
yeah.
It's just
well, I think so. West Wing's, because I think that in the 90s, I think people were wearing double breasted suits, right?
There's a lot of double breasted suits, but also people just didn't wear suits that's like they wore sensibly.
Well, I was going to say, I think West Wing is just after the era of double breasted suits, and we've gone back to single breasted, apart from Leo, who always wears a double breasted suit, which is interesting. But yeah, no, they're still like they're loose, right? They're baggy.
Mm. Yeah, and it's like it's more like I've got probably more. I've got more jackets now than I fucking need, right? Like after COVID, I like only ever like once in a blue moon that I'll ever wear one, and I've got like sizes around, you know, various different fits, and these days now I can't be fucking asked with like a suit that like okay it shows off your contours a little nicer and all that kind of thing, but at the end of the day. You feel uncomfortable, you look a little bit uncomfortable. Like, it's just like...
Yeah.
And it just, like, it almost feels... I don't know if this is some sort of, like, empathic judgment or whatever, but it's like, if... Like, when I see it on other people, I can see, like, you're sacrificing comfort to, like, have the body line.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? It's not worth it, and I judge you for being so vain.
I feel like over time, like, wouldn't... I don't know, like, do you think people still wear this stuff in... the White House now, or do you think over time like it gets more and more casual clothing like people stop being so uptight about
that's interesting yeah more I think
because like, I feel like in regular offices like my place does casual Friday like I feel like over time
that's such an American thing
the suits would go away yeah right
although it's yes. It's a little bit like at school did you have no uniform day once a year
oh of course yeah you're bringing your little pound for Save the Children or whatever yeah
and you got to wear my Malcolm X t-shirt
oh of course you wore that didn't you? I just wore regular shit
but yeah there's definitely certain workplaces that are still formal right but I think tech has changed this I think tech normalized wearing casual clothes to the office right so anything tech adjacent or trendy like advertising agencies you know that kind of place they started wearing casual clothes
yeah well there was I think COVID bumped it forward a little bit and I also think like there's a lot nowadays of and it might just be the general aura of societal cynicism, but like, I guess if it doesn't change things,
no.
Then does anyone care? Like, if the job gets done regardless, people, you know, I think people have a higher tolerance people aren't as superficial. I don't feel like I think
yeah,
people nowadays
I agree
feel
with that, yeah.
Maybe, you know,
I had a particular experience with that with years and years and years ago where I was living with my girlfriend and I were living with her parents for a while and I was going for a job interview at a biscuit factory and my girlfriend's dad insisted that I wear a suit for it and I was like this is literally a factory job packing
I mean good first impression but
well is it or is it like you don't
or is it over, like overdressing? Yeah. Is it like over doing too much?
But actually, so I went for the interview, and I don't mean this in like an arrogant way, or whatever. But like the person interviewing me was sort of aware that I was a bit better educated than the general person applying for that job, and they were like, "Do you want to?" Because I was applying for a part time job in the factory, and they said, "Like, do you want a job in the offices?" Like a full-time job in the office, better pay, like blah. And I was like, no, I really don't. I don't want to like that much time. And it went back and forth a little bit. And they got angry with me because it was like, it's a better job. Why won't you? And I was like, I just don't want to like, and they actually got angry with me and like kind of kicked me out.
Oh, wow.
Wow. It's a weird experience.
They're not going to get you what you want anyway.
To be fair, that sounded like you dodged a bullet with that corporate culture, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe. Well, it was a company selling broken biscuits only. There was a biscuit factory in the town, and they took the broken biscuits, you know, in crates and like boxed them up and sold them in supermarkets. So, I mean, fine. Wow. There's nothing wrong with that as a business. But,
No. Business ideas. It's not bad. You could probably. I mean, to be fair, if you got a good old TikTok going, like of just like biscuit based TikToks, you could just sell them to people by the ton on social media or something.
Yeah.
People would love, like, especially the cost of living crisis. I'll take a kilo of broken biscuits, you know.
Yeah. Tell you what, having a biscuit factory in the town, like at certain times of day when they were baking them, like, whole town smells of biscuits. It's kind of amazing.
Wow. It's like having a kitchen outside.
In an area where there's a lot of farming, so several times a year, our town just smells of shit.
Of the shits, though, right? Like, sheep shit actually smells quite pleasant, I would say. Cow shit is unpleasant, but then pig shit is like a million miles above that, like horrendous. Like, all the other shits are kind of okay, but pig shit, if you live near a pig farm, like, it's the piss and the shit mixed together. Yeah. And pig piss is very ammoniary, and their shit is not good, and it's awful. Awful smell.
Pig sties have that smell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more involved. It's more like...
It's a fuller bouquet.
More pungent. Yeah,
it's pungent. I worked on a pig farm for a while, and I don't know if it was just this breed of pigs or pigs in general, but they were very prone to anal prolapse. And part of your responsibility when you work on the pig farm is to poke their anuses back in when they fall out.
I hope nobody's eating during that.
With your finger or with a stick or just whatever.
Oh, hopefully with a stick or something else.
Well, a stick, you risk damaging them because, you know, it's quite delicate.
What if they, like, invent some kind of, like, tool for that, though? Like,
did
you just pick up a stick?
Yeah.
Do they have, like, something with, like, a blunt end so it doesn't do damage?
Yeah, is it like, I don't know.
The space in the module, isn't that? 3D print a pig anus reinserted. Oh, my God.
Can you imagine that?
Imagine
what did you guys? What did you guys? What did you guys think about
BBC at 7 or 8 o'clock?
What did you think about Leo chewing Vice President Hoynes there about the CJ trying to ask him the question? That tension's probably going to develop too, right?
Yeah,
we're going to see that flesh out.
I think for me, in hindsight of what comes later, like, it absolutely makes sense. CJ's got an annoying habit of being pissed off at people for them wanting to do her job, which irritates me. Mm. I don't know why she covers up that Hoynes was clearly kind of plotting against them, and then Leo making that out to be a good thing that she covered up for him. That's all a bit weird. But the bit I particularly don't like is when Leo's talking to the vice president. And the vice president says, "Your pal in the Oval Office." And Leo says, "Are you referring to the president?" And he says, "Yes, I am." And he says, "Please refer to him as such," or something like that, right? And at that point, I'd be like, excuse me.
Pal? Excuse me?
I would walk out at that point. It's like, we all know each other. What the fuck are you talking about?
That's a little bit like it's wanking over titles and shit.
Yeah.
It's like right-hand man protecting... He should be addressing him as...
Yeah, I feel, again, it's yet another thing that dates it. This is such a snapshot. I know it's like every other thing.
No, I think that's the thing. No, I think, did I mention this last episode? But the reverence for the office in America, you know, and the fact that...
Yeah, you talked about, yeah.
Yeah, even after, you know, even after their period in office, like, the presidents are your Mr. or, you know, theoretically Mrs. President. Governors are Mr. Governor for their, you know, the entire rest of their lives, and, you know,
is that a thing?
Yeah, Mr. Governor. Yep. It's odd. That's odd, right?
I missed that one. I'm surprised.
You imagine Mr. calling?
Are you sure? Can I Google that?
I believe that.
Mr. Governor.
I don't know. Actually, to be fair, I don't know what I typed in. Mr. Governor. It's just come back with other people called Mr. Governor. Like,
that's old
title.
You need more context.
All governors called.
The Mr. page on Wikipedia.
For life. How to address a U.S. governor? Former governors continue to be addressed in writing as honorable. Full name. Call them governor surname when talking to them directly. Call a governor sir, ma'am. After addressing, so maybe it's the honorable part thing. Yeah, I never heard that though. But I think American, like, again, it's the revolutionary roots, right? But there's a lot of respect for the office.
Also, I do have to feel the need to point out, like, especially given the today's sort of set of events, or, you know, with the coronation and everything, is like, us British wank over titles and that kind of stuff too.
Yeah.
Like,
I was going to say, I don't think it carries over to the public quite so much, but there clearly is a section of the society for whom it does.
I see. To me, it baffles me how many people support the royal family.
Yeah.
I get that there's I heard that you can classify people into five different groups. The people that are unquestioningly in favor of the monarch, there are people that are liberal middle grounders, which are like, well, you know, let's just keep going on, it seems to do its job all right,
they're good for tourism.
Good for tourism, that kind of thing. Then there's the we should probably get rid of it, but not now. You know, maybe when the opportunity arises.
Push it down the road.
You're staunch, you know, not even staunch Republicans, just your actual Republican.
Yeah.
You know, like, think that we should actually retire the monarchy. I think that was five. If not, there are.
Yeah.
We're talking about the five.
Yeah.
But it's like, out of all of those, like, I'm just surprised that it's like, why not just have anything modern? Not even necessarily.
Yeah.
I'm not asking.
Yeah, because support for the monarchy, like, on average, is about, it's something like 60%, 70%. But I did see a thing, 24 to 35 year olds have gone from 76% in support of the monarchy to, no, about, no, sorry, 70. They've gone to 36 in the space of 10 years.
Hmm. Hang on a minute. Was 76% of that age bracket pro-monarchy?
10 years ago, 70, not 76. So
24 to 35.
10 years ago, yeah, it was 70%, and now it's I think it was 36. It was around about 30 anyway. So that's in that age group.
That's
it's a big drop. It's dropped dramatically. I was going to say
drastically.
What age group was that again?
24 to 35, I think it was.
24 to 35.
It's remarkable. I wasn't expecting it to be that high, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's always surprising.
Were they really that popular?
Yeah.
Is it Charles? You know, chums with, you know, Jimmy Savile.
This is all this is, you know, 10 years before the Queen dying, right? And it smoothly declined. It must be a mixture of, treatment of what's her name? Thingies, I don't know what any of their names.
Diana or Meghan Markle?
Meghan Markle, yeah. I think treatment of Meghan Markle for a younger generation has been a factor. But yeah, I think also just if I had to say I think Sanders, Corbyn, awareness of, you know, us versus them, elites versus not elites, isn't fair. You know, the 1% versus the rest of us. I think is sort of that throws the royal family into a particular context. Just a general kind of.
So, like, the smallest, teeny weeny amount of class consciousness is enough to.
I think so. Yeah. Cast, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Like, but even a. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Did you watch the coronation?
I watched people making fun of it on TikTok.
So I watched it, and I didn't really. I've obviously never watched the coronation before. I've never watched a historical one. You know, obviously wasn't born when the last one happened. I was surprised as to quite how arcane it was. I wasn't expecting that. Like,
I was under the impression, and I think that coronations differ quite wildly depending on the personality of the monarch. Queen Elizabeth had quite a fancy one because I figured she liked being a fancy lady. But like, I don't know about, and I suppose with Charles, I was expecting something a bit relatively low key because he's just there. He's getting.
Well, there was one bit that's definitely a traditional bit, and I think because a lot of the coronation is only Victorian, right? It's not old. It dates back, 100, 200 years. But the really old stuff, like they brought him like a bunch of swords, and it's like, this is the sword of magic unicorns. You need to like blah blah blah. Here's the magic bracelets of, you know, something. It, like, it's like a fantasy book, but not in a good way. It was like a shitty cosplay of a fantasy book. And what
they have enchantments.
What struck me? Actual enchantments. Yeah. What struck me was just how tatty everything was and how tawdry it all. You know what I mean? It looks like threadbare and cheap, and I mean, it's an empire in decline kind of feeling. You know,
it looked it. Well, to be honest, I was not expecting something so gauche and tacky. Mm. Like it felt a little bit like Trump. Bit, you know, Trump has all the he's well known for having all his gold shit, and it felt like I get that a lot of this stuff I think is just carried on from Elizabeth, and she may have so it looks a little bit goldy, it looks a little bit feminine, I guess. I was expecting something a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit, I mean, it's a little less cosplaying. Like, I knew there'd be bishops and stuff, but like
another thing that struck me, there's a lot of people carrying sticks. Like, there's the magic sticks that he holds while he's being coronated. But as they, you know, proceeded down the aisle to the magic coronation area, like, a lot of people just carrying special sticks.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of special sticks in this country. I want to know what they do.
Yeah,
they're probably expensive too, huh?
And also, Penny Mordaunt was carrying two different swords. I think one is like the Sword of Power and the other's the Sword of Truth or something like that.
Yeah.
And one of them really looked like a toy sword. Like, it looked like a real tiny...
like a plastic...
Like a mini dagger.
Plastic jewels.
Like a shape, but with, like, maybe make, like, or like a fire poker that was fashion that someone stuck jewels to.
Yeah. I saw a good toot while it was going on.
I didn't watch any of it.
Somebody said, why doesn't the lady with the big sword simply kill the king and become king herself? Like, I enjoyed that.
I posted it in the Project Chronicle chat where they did the Game of Thrones theme tune over the royal map.
Oh no,
that fits just so well.
There's also because a lot of it is in Latin, right? There's a lot of misheard lyrics, and I posted one of them about Camilla, I like vagina or something like that. And there was a bit where I think it was a bit of Handel, and they say "Amen" a lot, but it really sounded like they were singing about ramen. It's like ramen.
It's not far off. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. You mumble, it's going to sound like something else.
But there was also a little bit. So it's a mixture of like very old music, kind of old music, and then things that have been composed for this particular coronation. And one of them was fucking. And I sighed. One was Andrew Lloyd Webber, and that just like takes the tackiness up to like.
What was it?
It was a composition for the coronation. It was awful as well.
They were going to do cats.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did cats with the creepy CGI faces. But it was awful. I often do feel ashamed to be British, but I felt so fucking ashamed to be British watching that. Oh, there was a bit, because I was watching the BBC one for, you know, the full on, you know, and there was a bit where. So all the representative whatevers of all the military whatevers come into the lawn in front of Buckingham Palace, such an awful building, such a tacky piece of shit building. But all the military branches assemble on the lawn and then like gave three cheers to the new king or something like that. And one of the commentators, he said, "Oh, they chose the wrong person to commentate this. I'm in tears watching this." I just burst out laughing. and he said, like, how can you see this and not be patriotic? Very, very fucking easily.
We're not fooling anyone anymore. There was a time when there was like, it's too much. It's just too much. Like, I watch, like, you know, we saw House of the Dragon, was it last year now? And Game of Thrones, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, the royal celebrations there, they look better and they do less. Like,
yeah.
Like, isn't that should be the goal, right? To do better, do less, not to do more.
But that's modernism. That idea that less is more is a facet of modernism, and you know the monarchy is the polar opposite of modernism.
Yeah,
but like, and even in the later, the worst of the series is of the Game of Thrones. Whenever they had like royal scenes, they were infinitely more interesting, but also like less.
You're saying they should have got tacky. They should have got
showy, tacky,
DG shiny. Vice, and what were their names? They should have got the showrunners for.
Dave and Dan. Yeah,
take care of the coronation. That would have been interesting, at least.
Yeah,
but it made sense. I think this sort of the pomp and circumstance. It made sense when we had an empire. Now we're sort of like a backwater that's with inflated importance because we've got a very large banking sector. Doesn't really fit us,
and we cling to the fucking pointless shit. Like, I'm sorry, those fucking beef eater hats.
Do you mean the beef eater hats, or do you mean the bearskin?
The bearskin ones. Yeah.
Okay, so when they all assembled on the lawn, there was a bit where they all have their guns, right? And there's a bit where they had to put the guns on the floor so they could do something. But the ones in the bearskin hats, they can't look down because their hats all fall off. So when they had
what do they do?
When they had to pick the guns up, they squatted with their heads like looking forwards and had to like feel around for where their gun was and like pick it back up.
Oh man.
Oh my god. So basically they would be defeated by an army of ferrets. Like they wouldn't stand.
Why did they have them all routinely take off? How many of them had the bearskin hats?
It was the army contingent all had the bearskin hats.
Why don't they all just like they can take it off together and set it down?
Well, there was a bit when they did. What was that?
Yeah,
there was a bit when they did all synchronize, take their hats off. It was when they're doing the hip hip hooray. They all took their hats off and held it on their shoulders and then did hip hip hooray and raised their hats into the air. I felt mortified.
And the thing is as well is that like you could like genuinely right imagine a coronation where there was people in just wore your nice suit and you did all that kind of stuff and then maybe the palace guard maybe they didn't wear like half a bear on their head. Maybe they actually wore vaguely practical sensible
or maybe sever the link between. I'm so distrustful of anything that glorifies military.
An actual military uniform, because like that might look a bit like on the streets of London. Maybe you want something a bit softer. So the red, keep the red. Maybe make them look like Butlins people or something. You know, I don't know. Just have something that like you could even just do your job in. That would make, I'm sure. I mean, I don't even follow the royal family in other countries. Are they as wacky as this? Like,
no.
Because this was a little sad to watch. But Stephen Fry was defending the monarch,
of course,
and he was talking about he was kind of making the best possible argument for the monarch is that you've got like a non-partisan, non-bound by election person to sign stuff off with, except he can't really sign stuff off with, who goes around shaking hands of other countries, yada yada yada.
The idea that the monarchy is non-partisan, like that's a fucking fairy tale. The idea that they're non-partisan, they are on the side of money.
Yeah, they're on their own party, but they're
even their own party. I think a modern monarchy. Who's got massive investments in business and land throughout the country? They're just on the side of capital. I don't think there's any ambiguity there. This isn't the Renaissance when it was the old aristocracy versus the up and coming new gauche mercantile class. Those two things have been unified now.
Yeah,
in terms of their intra-class interests, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
I mean, the sad thing is we had a revolution in this country. We chopped off the head of the first Charles. We got rid of. We did it. We won, and then we were nervous and put a new king on the throne. we're rubbish. We are rubbish.
We can't, like, oh man, we might be able to fight a war with the French. We can't fucking do it amongst ourselves, can we?
It was, yeah, no, one thing I find interesting about the English Civil War is at the time that the war broke out, England hadn't really been in a war for like a generation or two. So the first few battles of the English Civil War, or the first like few years of battles, nobody knew what the fuck they were doing. There was nobody with military training. There was nobody who knew tactics. Like, our tactics were like 70 years out of date. So the first few battles, the first few years of battle, they were just like appalling, like shit shows.
Were they just riots, or basically?
Yeah, just like disorganized. Like, nobody really wanted to fight each other.
How does a battle work in a civil war, right? Because like in a international context, it makes a lot of sense. I want to take your land. I send my armies over. We take the land, right?
Yeah.
But like when you've got, I mean, okay, sure. You're gonna have.
It's more control, right? It's not land taking. It's like power, right? It's like power, seizing power.
But if you've got like, I mean, I suppose it works a little bit like how political constituencies work today, where you're gonna have royalist sectors. You're gonna have.
Yeah, I think early on in the Civil War, it was largely a case of who got to you first. Like, if the Royalists arrive, you know, the Royalists, like, whatever, like high command, they arrive in your town and they're like, right, you're in the Royalist army now. And if the Roundheads got there first, then you're in the Parliamentary army. And later on, yeah, places had allegiances.
Yeah. It's like a recruitment race.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Well, yeah. That's like the Battle for Wesnoth. That's how
it works. But I think the sort of practice we got in the English Civil War that prepared us for the next couple of hundred years of like that made England good at war again, which I don't think is a good thing for the world, but you know.
No, we're sorry about that, rest of the world.
We've been off West Wing for quite a while. Should we? You are sorry?
We fucked up a lot of countries.
we were not good.
No.
Not good.
No. Well, basically, in the end of the 1960s Batman movie with Adam West, the very last scene, which just fucking makes the movie, I'm sorry if it's a spoiler, good. It is, in fact, very easily in my top five movies of all time. Wow. It is one of the best made movies. It is the by far and away the best action hero movie. Probably maybe even the best comedy. Like, it's just, it is a amazing film. But at the end, they realize they've kind of botched the ending. Like, it's a good ending, but there's a big sort of caveat at the end. And what you see is, like, Batman and Robin just be like, okay, Robin, back away slowly. And no one is, like, you know, creeping out. And I kind of feel like that's how Britain's done with the British Empire. Like, we just fucked over half the world and we're going to just try and...
slowly walk out of frame and make sure nobody notices when you leave. Yeah. Before the fight starts. Like,
also a bastard, and we'll just pile on them.
Yeah.
No, just like nudge somebody back into the scene where you were and be like, you handle what just.
I love the British Museum's defense was that, like, not all of our stuff was stolen. I'm sure we'll find something. Oh my god! Do you ever follow the Twitter account No Context Spritz?
No.
So it's basically British humor Twitter account. It's not bad. It's got some good laughs on it. But one of the sort of the ongoing jokes in this Twitter account is like the British Museum stealing something, and they'll find like a funny, like, there's one great photograph of these two like student traveler looking at kids, and one of them's holding the backpack and the other's doing that thing of perspective where they're putting the Tower of Pisa in the backpack.
Yeah, they look like they're taking,
yeah, it looks like they're stealing the Tower of Pisa.
Tower of Pisa.
We kept putting things like, this is what Britons do abroad, and then they're just like, come on. And they sent it to the British Museum and they got blocked.
I saw a good one actually when the Queen died. I think it was somebody at like the Museum of Cairo or something going like essentially saying, like, we're going to steal the Queen's sarcophagus and put it on display.
Right, we've gotten off track, haven't we?
Speaking of imperialism,
so yeah, Bartlett goes from I'm not a military man to let's bomb the Middle East, which, par for the course for an American president, I guess.
Especially Democrat.
Especially Democrat. Yeah, they do love bombing the Middle East.
Yeah, I don't know if a Republican would have showed that level of hesitancy, but maybe. Who knows?
I think a Republican. I think. I think Democrats.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's kind of like law and order. I think with the military, Democrats almost feel, and this applies to Labour as well, they have to be more militaristic to prove that they're not soft on that stuff.
That's your, yeah, and you often find that with women and people of colour who do well in politics, is they'll often lurch to the right in order to gain that kind of like,
yeah.
I don't know, it depends how you want to look at it. It could be to like gain that kind of credibility or to show that you're tough on crime, tough on immigrants, tough on something like that.
You're going to like lean to one side.
That you're just seeking, maybe more cynically thinking, that you're just strategically going that way so that you can garner the benefits of being right wing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Great media, for example.
Image related, yeah.
I mean, up until the 90s, like involvement in a war was like great for your approval rate, like Thatcher with the Falklands, right?
And they were talking about this on the radio today. It's like Thatcher was really not looking great before the Falklands War. Best thing that ever fucking happened to him.
Yeah, yeah. And
that and the trouble is, of course, that who fucking took the lesson from that is of course Tony Blair, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which,
well, Tony Blair and Pinochet.
Yeah, did it work for Tony Blair?
Absolutely not, right? There was a massive public outcry even before the war began. There were huge, like unprecedented.
I remember one of the biggest protests.
Sorry?
In fact, that was my first march, actually.
Was it really? Yeah. So in terms of that, no, but like he never seemed to face repercussions for it. Like obviously he's not been tried at The Hague as he should be, but not even in terms of his career, I don't think. The kind of people that, you know, the demographics of the people who were very strongly against the war, which is, you know, younger people and very left-leaning people, it just didn't affect him. He didn't need those people.
I worry a little bit about the rehabilitation of Blair.
Oh, I worry immensely about the rehabilitation of Spin Doctor Man.
Oh, Boris Johnson?
No. Blair's Spin Doctor. The one who was...
Oh, Mandelson.
Yeah, because he... No, not Mandelson. Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's very clever and very, I want to say evil, but I'll say like he's a radical centrist. You know, he's still in that Blair mentality and he is incredibly clever.
Yeah. And, yeah. Well, I mean, the trouble is,
do you know, like, he's got he's got the number one podcast on Spotify in the UK or something like that. He's rehabilitated himself through essentially like he's doing a lot of like mental health stuff. He's been very candid about mental health and like help. And then, but now he's like, you know, rebranded himself or not rebranded himself, but like what's the word? Rehabilitated himself. He's now doing a news podcast, which will, you know, piggyback off the popularity of that, and he's going to spew his evil views to millions.
That's kind of rebranding.
Yeah.
Oh, he's talking with Rory Stewart in this
new tactic, same strategy.
Yeah. Oh, he could have come up with a better name. Why do these celebrities that always do podcasts have the fucking worst?
What's
names?
What's it called?
The rest is politics.
Oh. But yeah, I mean, by all accounts, he was the one running policy during the Blair years. Like Blair, by all candid accounts of people near him, like Blair's a fucking idiot. And Campbell, and Campbell was, what's his name? Peter Hitchens has got like an anecdote where he said he met Blair one time and they were talking about Brazil. And Blair was talking about visiting Brazil and how much he was liked in Brazil. And Peter Hitchens said, you should learn Portuguese then. And Blair goes, why Portuguese? Meaning he didn't realize, he thought they spoke Brazilian or something. Like, not a smart fella.
I don't want to be like a snowflake enabler. But like, Okay, but like, so here's a cobbled together argument in the defense of it, right? It's like your prime minister, theoretically, a good, like, your good prime minister is like the thing they're going to be best at is the charisma stuff.
Are you sure?
The speech.
No, I think the system they come up with actually worked very well. Yeah, I think having it's almost like Blair as head of state doing the PR stuff and then Campbell in the background doing the clever policy stuff. Yeah. I just wish they weren't evil.
The evil is definitely
a problem.
Negative, yeah. Yeah, see, that's because in many ways that's a lot of what was interesting about Trump was when he got elected, who's he going to surround himself with? The thing is, of course, establishment kind of got there for them in a big part, and they kind of had a bit of a field day with those tax cuts and the military spending and all that kind of stuff. It was very embarrassing, but like policy wise,
well, the right is so resilient, they can survive stuff like this, right? And I mean, he's going to run in 2024, and honestly, I'd be amazed if he doesn't win.
What's going to bring him down?
Yeah.
This is absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
But like, see, I think there are a potential couple of Democrats that would in the future.
It's so frustrating. I think the Democrats could make such massive gains by, you know, going significantly to the left.
They will do.
It's risky,
I think that's going to be a when, not an if.
But institutionally, they're just not there. Like, they will just hamper and smother anything remotely, you know. I mean, Hillary, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, I think they'll die off.
Yeah.
Once those ones die off, and don't get me wrong, I'm not talking tomorrow or next
year.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But like, you know, the Ilhan Omars and the AOCs, they'll do better.
I hope so.
They might not be perfect. They'll do better. They'll, you know, AOC's going to run for president, and you know, I think she won't do as badly as she would do if she ran today.
So people are talking like Biden. So Biden's going to run in 2024. He's 80 now.
Yeah, but the reason he's going to run is they know he's the best shot against Trump. Like they've worked the numbers. They've done the focus groups.
But people are saying, like, it's quite likely he dies in office. You've got Kamala Harris as president.
Very low.
And I heard some podcast, and they played a snippet of her of a speech she gave the other day, and her speech was just along the lines of, like, in this place and in this time, we have to remember that there are previous times, that, you know, the past, and there are times in the future. And in the future, the present will be the past, and we have to remember. And it was just this incoherent ramble about nothing.
But that's on purpose, because they kind of wanted to be invisible. They wanted to say the most forgettable, meaningless stuff. They've completely turned down the riskometer onto her. Like she's
the equivalent of what Labour leader whose name I literally can't remember. You said it earlier. What's his name?
Keir Starmer.
I cannot remember that name. Yeah,
he does strike me as a very generic style of politician.
He's utterly forgettable.
I think I probably can tolerate Keir Starmer substantially more than you, to be fair, but. He, like, in the Mass Effect, I don't know why I'm referencing Mass Effect
so many times. Not really, only a handful.
More about the Mass Effect than about the West Wing today. So.
If a named character of your crew dies off, they'll get replaced by like a sort of a generic character.
Oh, really?
A replacement character.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll just like fill the role, the minimum bits of the role, but they basically effectively. And I feel like Keir Starmer's like that. Like we would have had like another opposition on Labour, but they
ran out.
They didn't make it this far in the plot. Yeah, they died off.
I see him and Rishi Sunak are kind of that. Rishi, like, they just ran out of.
Yeah, Rishi Sunak could be a little bit like that as well. I guess. Yeah, like they know. You know, it's like in another reality, like Liz Truss would have gone for a little bit longer. Because I mean, I know she basically fucking caused untold damage that will probably be felt for quite some time, to be honest. She was a laugh.
It was entertaining.
It was, you know, like the end of the world had never been so funny, right? Like,
yeah. And she was just like, it was, how is she going to self sabotage today?
Yeah. I felt like there were little, like, I did feel a bit sorry for her at times because she was clearly in over her head.
Yeah.
Like,
very stupid. She was kind of a Trump without the charisma. You know, like, whatever you say about Trump, he's.
The lack of charisma was watchable. The most interesting thing. It was amazing. Mm. She had minus charisma. And the fact that she had something like a 16-month long affair is like, that's just the cherry on top. Like, she had a Mr. Mistress. Like,
what's the name of the woman who came before?
Theresa May.
Theresa May. She made Theresa May look charismatic.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
I'm not going to say I didn't mind Theresa May, but like out of all of the recent bunch, I would have chosen her.
There's like, something very sort of like old-fashioned Church of England-y about her.
Exactly.
She could be village fate. She'd fit in at a village fate.
Exactly. She was probably a great church warden, you know?
Yeah.
It's so, but I'm sure I had a point. Oh yeah, Keir Starmer just seems like a stand-in NPC for a, you know.
It's the strategy of do nothing, isn't it? Should we wrap up there? I feel like we didn't have a ton to say about this week's episode.
I feel like it's probably like 60-40 with other stuff.
Yeah.
70-30.
Well, we need to rank it.
Yeah, we need to choose a state.
Oh geez.
Do we need to do this in a spreadsheet or something? Are we allowed to choose the same?
I'm hoping that somebody more organized than me will actually.
I'm sure. Like, I don't think we. I don't think we have to. Like, I think we can choose the same one again.
Oh yeah, choosing the same one again is fine.
If we want, we don't have to. We don't have to eliminate it.
Otherwise,
every time.
We can only watch 50 episodes.
Well, once we've done the 50 episodes,
and not even 50. 50 divided by however many people there are watching.
That's true.
I don't know.
We see which season wins the election.
Yeah.
Which season has the most electoral college votes?
Right.
I don't even remember what I picked last time.
You've put it up. Let's see. You put it up in the one of the chats.
It's in the general. I think I'm gonna go
Michigan. I think it's they're not amongst my favorite episodes, but there's nothing really wrong with it. I just think it's not particularly great one to rewatch. It's got some character stuff. It's fine, but it's focused on the less. So I don't think Sorkin's good at geopolitical stuff. I prefer the more procedural White House shenanigans. You know, trying to get the Congress in line, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm still following it as a character piece at the moment. I don't remember what I did last time.
I don't even remember.
Was this better or was this worse?
Feels like it was.
I think it was better.
A little better. I don't even remember what I chose last time.
Maybe in North Carolina.
Yeah. What's that? What's North Carolina? 15? Yeah.
I think I did. Yeah. I think I did like Indiana last time. I can't remember.
Okay. Yeah. North Carolina.
So what about
yeah, I'll do Virginia. Virginia.
That's 30. I would say, so we're giving it a 13, a 15, and a 17. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's...
What's the average of those?
14 and a half, something like that? Oh, no, I gave it 17.
Like that.
It's probably about 15 then, right? 15, 16?
Somewhere around.
Something like that, maybe. Awesome.
Okay. Thank you for listening about the coronation.
Well... It is what it is.
I didn't watch it.
There's no Patreon for this podcast. You didn't pay for it. You get what you're given and you like it.
If you want to support us, support Boeing and Monsanto. Send them a check.
Try to get us a sponsor.
They can use every in these dark times of record profits, they can really use your help.
Or you could just share this really long podcast with a friend.
It's really hot podcast about nothing.
Make someone else sit through this with you.
Okay, I'm gonna end it. Goodbye.
Goodbye.